We're continuing our study through the book of Jonah, looking at this prophet from the somewhere around the 8th century and the message that he might have for us today, 2,700 years later. What is this prophet speaking in a foreign place and in an unknown tongue to us have to say to us living in the 21st century? And the answer is hopefully a lot. And today we're continuing into that story. One of the most amazing things that I ever learned in college was this little study that I had to read for psychology class. And the study went like this. They took this pair of glasses and they put them on someone's face and it made their entire world turn upside down. Everything that just the moment before had looked right side up now was upside down. And they made them wear them for weeks. Now imagine how weird this has got to be. You're walking around and everything looks upside down. But then this amazing thing happened. A few weeks into the study, everything flipped again. Their brain turned and compensated for the fact that everything looked wrong, and so then it made it look right side up. And the thing that I walked away with then was just how crazy is our brain, right? I mean, that God made this thing that can begin to heal itself sometimes when there are traumatic injuries. It can create new pathways to do the things it could do before. The human brain is this wonderful, mysterious, beautiful thing. It is just boggles the mind. And so sometimes we describe things as right brain or left brain, but artistic or analytical. But really, that's too simplistic because anytime we are doing anything, different parts of the brain light up across the spectrum as we dream and discover, as we create and cognate. And so using our brains, we can compose beautiful symphonies. We can build bridges. We can discover how to work within the laws of physics to take somebody from the earth and put them on the moon. We can dream when we lay our heads down at night. The brain is this incredibly complex and beautiful and marvelous thing. And then it can be incredibly silly. It can become outrageously, incredibly angry while installing a car seat. Okay, at least mine did yesterday. Because when we become stressed enough, whether that is over time building or just in the midst of kind of an immediate situation, this tiny almond-shaped and sized part called the amygdala then just takes over. Right? The amygdala is often described as this primitive part of our brain, but it's the part that decides in a split instant whether or not we need to fight or flee. It processes fear, it alerts us to danger, it activates this response. And so if you're watching a scary movie, you know nothing's going to happen to you, but you go lock the door anyway, right? Or if you're at a restaurant and somebody drops the plate, the big thing full of dishes and they shatter, everyone gets quiet, not because they want to hear what happens next, but to make sure that everything's going to be okay. The amygdala decides, based on input in a split second, what response is going to be. Do I need to deal with that situation, or do I need to pass it on for judgment? Because when danger threatens, you don't have a lot of time to think about it. And so the amygdala then makes our heart rate go up, and our blood pressure rises, and our breathing quickens, and our muscles tense, and sweat begins to bead. And suddenly we're overcome with the need to deal with the situation in any way that we can. And so we scream, "Ah, you silly piece of plastic!" Because we get angry at silly things, don't we? It might not be the right response, especially when that's the look of joy I got for putting in a new car seat yesterday. But anger isn't always logical, is it? Doesn't always make a lot of sense. We often become angry about trite or trivial things. We all know what anger is for the most part. We know it when we see it. The American Psychological Association defines anger as an emotion characterized by antagonism towards someone or something you feel has deliberately done you wrong. Not whether or not they did it on purpose, but you feel like they did it on purpose. It could be correct or just perceived. It doesn't matter to your amygdala. It's not there to decide why they wronged you. It just knows that you were wronged. And you really only have three responses, don't you? You can express it, you can suppress it, or you can learn how to calm it down. We'll come back to those in a minute. But in our story today, Jonah is experiencing the effects of anger. Jonah had been called by God to go to Nineveh, and he was absolute and obstinate. No. Absolutely not. He refused God, and he rejected his calling, and he ran the other way. He fled. And as we've seen, it took a storm, a tossing overboard, and then a span of 3 days in the belly of a fish before he relented and repented of his actions. And then amazingly, after all of that, Jonah gets a second chance. For the word of the Lord came to Jonah a second time, "Go to the great city of Nineveh and proclaim to it the message I give you." And this time Jonah obeyed. He got up and he went to Nineveh. And then the writer begins to tell us about the city just in some very brief terms. Now, Nineveh was a very large city. And what we read just a minute ago, it said it had 120,000 people in it, which is just massive for a city in that day and age. It took 3 days just to go through it, it says. And Jonah began by going a day's journey into the city, proclaiming 40 more days, and Nineveh will be overthrown. And then this amazing thing happened. We looked at this part of the story last week. People actually listen to this street preacher. When I worked at the University of Kansas, there was this guy who would come and bring his little mic stand and his microphone, and he would stand on top of his speaker and tell everybody about how they were going to hell, about all the terrible, sinful things they were doing. And by the way, there were terrible and sinful things going on. But this guy enjoyed describing what hell was like to all the people who were walking by. Now, at some point, I'm sure this had worked for this guy. But when I was working there, not a single person stopped. Nobody even stopped to argue with him. No one rolled their eyes. He was a part of the scenery. I think I am the only person who ever noticed when he stood on that corner. And yet, here's what's amazing. Jonah walks through the city. He stands on street corners. His message isn't much different, and he gains a listening audience. And the people respond with repentance. And in the description, it talks about sackcloth and ashes and public mourning. People are sharing the news with everyone that they knew to the point where it gets word to the king of the city. And rather than sending troops to arrest the prophet on the street corner and throw him in jail, the king steps off his throne and humbles himself. He gets off of his throne, he gets on his knees, and he begins to pray. And when God saw what they did and how they turned from their evil ways, he relented and did not bring on them the destruction he had threatened. And at this point, Jonah should be overjoyed, elated, rejoicing. His ministry worked and his message was heard. But Jonah felt betrayed. He wasn't elated, he was embittered. He wasn't rejoicing, he felt wronged. Because to Jonah, man, all of this seemed very wrong. And he became angry. And who is Jonah angry with? Is it with the Assyrians? Well, probably a little bit, because Jonah hated these people. They were his enemies. And the Assyrians were known as being mean and vicious. They would continue to be so and to be the enemies of the people of Israel from this point onwards as well. So it's possible that's who he's angry with. Is Jonah angry with himself at this moment? Well, maybe a little bit, because his ministry worked, and so now his enemies are going to find some hope and salvation. He is hoping for a message of destruction, and he sees redemption. Or is Jonah angry with God? And I think that's where it sits. Because it doesn't seem fair. In fact, Jonah goes on to tell us how he's feeling. I told you this was going to happen. I knew it. I knew who you were and what you were like. And here he's not talking to the Assyrians. He's talking to God. I knew that you were a gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger and abounding in love, a God who relents in sending calamity. I knew it, and it's not fair. Jonah gets angry because God is God. Because God acts the way that he acts. Because God is merciful, gracious, and compassionate. These are the words that are found throughout the Old Testament. It's how God describes himself in Exodus 34, and it's how different passages from Job to Psalms to the prophets talk about who God is and what he is like. This is what he is celebrated for and worshiped about in their beliefs. And Jonah is mad. Because Jonah is angry that he sees God going soft on sinners. They are terrible, horrible human beings. They are our enemies. They are terrorists. They are the worst of the worst. And God just forgave them? Seriously. Jonah isn't just upset. Jonah's calling God's actions evil. In the description, it talks about how he is burning with anger. And the wording that is here is similar to this type of wind that blew up from the Sahara. It's a scorcher, and it blazes, and it makes everything hot. And some of you might have been feeling like that this week. But its heat is relentless. And you either learn to endure it, or you wither and die. In fact, the description is used twice in Chapter 4. It's used of Jonah and his feelings and of what happens to our little plant. And right now, Jonah is burning up and he wishes he was dead. Jonah is being insolent, disrespectful, embittered, even a little bit profane. And God's response is restrained because God is God. And so then, rather than reading him the riot act or afflicting him to get his attention or just sending him in time out for a little bit, God responds with a question. Is it right for you to be so angry? And Jonah does what he does best once again. Jonah now runs away. He goes out into the desert overlooking the city. There he goes up on a hill and he sits down. He makes himself this little lean-to and he's waiting to see if God's going to change his mind and destroy this city after all. And then something incredible happens. God takes care of Jonah. In the middle of the desert, he makes this little plant start to grow. And it must have been kudzu because it grows overnight to be a part where it could just gather shade so he doesn't feel the heat out in the desert. And Jonah is happy, content. In the course of 24 hours, Jonah grows to love that little plant. And then the next day, God sends a worm. And that little vine that grew up so quickly withers overnight and dies. And then it takes another step. Then that hot wind begins to blow. The sun bears down. That just shrivels up. And Jonah is miserable. In fact, he says, I just want to die. And then God asks him a question again. Is it right for you to be angry about this plant? Is it right for you to be angry? Now, I don't want you to walk out of here today thinking, okay, if I'm angry, then I've sinned and I've fallen out of God's will, because there's a lot of good and righteous anger that exists in our world, okay? There are things about which we should become angry. We find Jesus becoming so angry at what he sees taking place in the temple, he leaves, makes a whip to come back in and drive the people out. There is a part at which righteous anger exists at sin and suffering. But I find myself becoming angry at petty things. Getting cut off in traffic. My kids being too loud. My kids making a mess. My kids being kids. My wife asking me to do some housework I really don't want to do. When somebody bothers me on my day off. When my plans get postponed and my whole day gets thrown off. When the internet's running too slowly. I find myself becoming angry at things that are an inconvenience to me. And I find myself not getting angry at the things that truly matter. Injustice and inhumanity, oppression and violence and abuse, racism and sexism and classism, and when people are treated like they don't matter at all, when we ignore things like war and genocide, terrorism and persecution, famine and hunger, the lack of access to clean drinking water, the fact that people in our world die of diseases that we could heal for a couple of bucks, all because it's happening over there, and it doesn't affect me much, and so I don't have to deal with it. I don't get angry when people matter less than profit, when corners are cut to cut our bottom lines, when people aren't seen as people at all. Because that's the kind of stuff that matters. That is a holy and righteous anger. Not when my car seat won't fit in or the internet's running too slow. That's my confession. I'm angry at all the wrong things. And Jonah here is the same. He is being selfish and self-centered. He cares more for his own comfort and well-being than about the lives of those in Nineveh. He is angry that he hasn't gotten his way. He wanted to see his enemies punished. Cares more for a vine than the people in the city. He was fine for them all to be condemned and destroyed, but he's angry that that little plant that he had no part in tending or making grow didn't make it through the night. He's angry at God because he didn't want God to be gracious and merciful, slow to anger and abounding in love. Actually, let me rephrase that. He is happy for God to be gracious and compassionate and slow to anger and abounding in love when it comes to him. When he's sitting in the belly of the beast, when he's rejected God time and time again, when God's grace falls on him, man, he is all about that and he loves it. But for his enemies, God better not let his grace show to them. And he's angry. And there's only three real responses to anger. You can express it, you can suppress it, or you can calm it. And Jonah chooses to express it. And although it does come across as kind of prideful and insolent, it's actually in a way that is incredibly helpful. It's not in a violent rage or an angry action towards others. He takes it out on God. And his words are full of vitriol and frustration, but he takes them to the one who's big enough to take it. And it might seem profane to us as we read it, but it's also incredibly spiritual and healthy. Because God doesn't just want our happy, clappy emotions in life, although he's fine with those, by the way. And he doesn't tell us you can only show up here when you're happy and content and satisfied or when you've got it all together. But if you've got a bad mood, you need to take that somewhere else till you're happy. That's not what God does. Instead, God allows us, all of us, with all of our emotions and our frustrations and our baggage, to come before him. And God is big enough to take our anger, our hurt, our rage. And God doesn't respond with a harsh rebuke. He doesn't take that moment to turn it into a theological debate. Instead, God does what good parents often do. Just asks a question. Is this right? Anger can kill us. the heat of the moment, the immediacy of the remark, the threat of violence. Anger can kill us. It can lead to aggression, assault, abuse, a violent encounter, and attack. And in the heat of the moment, we might respond in a way that we had never planned, and we're going to have to deal with whatever the consequences may be. But anger can also kill us slowly. It can build in our heart and grow over time. And it leads us towards bitterness and cynicism, or depression, or hatred, or rage. And it can poison our hearts. It can destroy our relationships. It shatters our dreams. It can dominate our future. And we either need to learn to deal with our anger, or we're going to die with it. There are only three main responses. And in the first two, there are healthy and unhealthy responses within it. You can express your anger in a way that is healthy through conversation with a trusted friend who's willing to listen and give feedback if it's needed, or the counselor or a therapist as you learn to deal with the emotions you experience. You can scream it out, you can go to the gym, you can go chop wood, you can do whatever it takes to let you get that out and channel your anger into something positive. You can allow it to change your actions and funnel your anger into doing something about the situations in our world. Or you can do it in an unhealthy way through things like road rage or lashing out or screaming at your kids or tearing into a coworker or getting into a fight. You can suppress your anger because that can be healthy too. Sometimes you just need to let stuff roll off your back. It's not that big of a deal sometimes. Kids have a bad day like we do. Sometimes they snap at us or roll their eyes. My 5-year-old is really good at that, by the way. There are some things in life that just aren't important, though. In fact, some of the things that we get angry about might just be cries for our attention. Sometimes we just need to learn how to let things go. But there are other ways suppressing can be unhealthy. Conceal, don't feel, don't let it show doesn't work in Disney films, and it might not work in your life. You can't just sweep it under the rug, pretend it didn't happen, not deal with the emotions, because at some point, it's going to come raging back to the surface. There are an awful lot of Frozen references in that sermon, by the way. I realized reading through it last night, so you can go back and listen to it if you want. It was unintentional. We can express it. We can suppress it, or we can calm it. We can spend some time in silence and reflection. We can deal with our own hearts and decide what to do. Even better, you can spend some time in prayer. Just take your emotions to God and be as open and forthright as you need to be, because God is big enough to take it. He doesn't mind if you scream, if you rage, because your anger is not going to separate you from God's love. But here's the thing, we have to deal with our anger or you'll die with it. Either anger unresolved in your heart will leave you broken and bitter, or it could just be the very cause of your death. That's what Jonah is crying out for here. He wants to die because he is so angry. And God meets him where he is and asks him the most important question of the entire book, one we'll come to in just a couple of weeks. Because people matter to God. Who we are matters to God, and we don't have to have it all together. We don't have to have all of our ducks in a row, have it all figured out. We don't have to have all of our actions be perfect. In fact, it's by realizing we can't that God does his best work. It's at that moment when we take ourselves to God and say, look, I don't know what to do about this, that God says, let me have it. Because God is gracious and compassionate. He is slow to anger and abounding in love and faithfulness, and he wants to bring that to bear in your life. We're going to offer this time at which you can respond. You can respond privately in your seat, just spend some time in prayer. You can come to the front if you would like, and I'll be here to talk with you. You can grab somebody before you leave and just talk about whatever's going on in life. If you want somebody to pray with you, We would be happy to do that. If you need somebody to say, I just want to learn about who God is and how I bring that grace to bear in my life, we would love to do that too. If you just need somebody to listen, we want to do that. We want to be here for you because we believe in a God who is gracious and compassionate. My prayer for you this week is you will walk away knowing that, living in it. You will take yourself to God. If there's any anger in your heart, you will let him have that as well. Because God wants to bring his grace to bear on you. We're going to sing. If you want to respond publicly, this is the time to do it. Know that we love you and God loves you.